Welcome back, everybody, to First Ring Daily, where I can exclusively confirm the cat came back the very next day.
What?
I thought you were petting your cat right before.
Oh, no. Actually, the cat is not here.
Oh, fake news, I guess.
Brad, it's 11 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is that my daughter is an hour from home taking her driving test.
And oh, boy.
If she passes, I mean, she could drive a car legally in the state of Pennsylvania. Well, I guess legally anywhere. If she doesn't, we are screwed. Because the reason she's an hour from home is because one of the weird, dumb things about this state is the next time she'll be able to take this test is after October.
I was looking for a bottle of scotch, but I don't have any. But,
So, you know, given that she just got a job and is working 40 hours this week and gets out of work at 10:30 at night, we're kind of hoping she gets the license. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and then you can just start referring to her as Uber.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So, a little nervous for all of us.
So, when will we find out the verdict here?
I'm thinking my wife will text me, possibly during the show, I guess we'll see.
Oof. Well, we will be anxious.
I don't know how long the test is. It's probably, it's got to be at least 15, 20 minutes, right? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. When I got my driving test, what do you have to do? We in Ohio, you have to do, there's like a written and then a driving portion, so you have to pass the written. And this was, well, Jesus, what, 16 years ago?
Pennsylvania isn't quite the South, but it's close enough to the South that I assume one of the tests is jumping over a river in a car that has doors that can't open. I don't know.
Yeah, and then we had to do like a parallel parking thing and then like a road test. And yep.
Sure. Yeah, parallel parking's part of it. They've been practicing for weeks on that, actually. I mean, you'll be surprised to know that my wife plays a far bigger role in everything my kids do than I do.
Yeah.
I know. It's weird.
It's very, yeah. Nothing like that happens at my house for sure.
I'm surprised my kids even realize who I am. You know, who's the older kid that lives here, too?
He's just always talking to his computer, too. It's very weird.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very weird. Other things that might sound not so weird, but Alexa, oh, shoot. Stop. It said, I don't know that one. But that thing that I just said, which probably activated
the Amazon thing.
Yeah, it's coming to your hotel room. And this took a lot longer than I thought, but it's basically a customized version of the platform for hotels that they can then modify. And you can order food and towels and all that stuff. And I think it's a brilliant move.
Yeah, I continue to be really impressed by the way they're handling this product. And the reason is, I always kind of thought that Google would swoop in and just steal it away from them, you know.
Yep.
I still feel like Google is going to, you know, win, whatever that means. I mean, you know, win. If Google has, you know, 52% market share and Amazon has 48%, I guess that's winning. But the truth is they've done everything they can, they being Amazon, to, you know, retain this as much of the lead as they can and to just keep their platform ahead, you know. And again, you've got this. I mean, it's two unspeakable behemoths going at it, so it's kind of interesting on that level, too.
Yep.
But this is a market I always kind of felt like Amazon doesn't really need to win this, and my God, are they going for it, you know? So,
yeah,
good for them.
There's a couple interesting things about Amazon. One, their company, it's a bunch of just random things, right? They have this massive cloud service, then they have this massive online buy anything you want, get it delivered. Then they bought they bought a grocery store, and then they have this digital assistant. Yeah. They also have a $15 a month messaging service. It's just a bunch of random stuff. And I fully agree with you that I believe Google has the better product, but Amazon has the better business.
Yeah, it's impressive, and there's a chance this could change in the future. But the thing I keep saying about Amazon is, They can offer this combination of digital and physical perks through their Prime membership that is something other companies they compete with on either side can't match. You know, if you're Walmart, trying to compete with Amazon must be horrific. But if you're Google or Microsoft or Apple or whatever, competing with Amazon must be horrific. Yeah. I mean,
it's scary.
Apple's big enough they could start buying up physical goods companies and stuff, I guess. I mean, I suppose there are some luxury brand associations you could make there, but there just is no company like Amazon. Maybe in China. I don't really know how that market as well, but I've never seen anything like Amazon, and I don't believe there is another company like them on Earth.
No, the interesting thing about them is that they have the technology background. Granted, they've got a lot of work to do on their AI side, but they're getting there. I mean, it's feasible you could see them getting to that portion. But then not only that, to your point, they have that physical side where then they can literally take anything and now, at least in the U.S., distribute it, and a lot of times in less than 2 hours to your house if you want.
Yeah, right. I remembered it. So back in this could have been as long ago as the 90s, but it was probably the early 2000s. There were all these little internet startups mm-hmm. that were just like ridiculous services. And one of them was called Cosmo, and it was in New York City. And you could, you know, sign into their website and order anything, and they would just bring it to you, right? It being 2000 and them not having any kind of infrastructure whatsoever, what that meant was, and this, I had a friend who literally did this. You could say, I want a candy bar, and they would charge you for the candy bar, and a guy would get on a bike, drive it to your home, and hand it to you. Now, that company is not around mm-hmm. anymore. Yeah. They didn't last very long. You know, it was a stupid idea, but Amazon is reaching the scale where they might literally be able to do what I just described and make money on it, you know?
Yeah. Portion of what you just said, that second half, anybody can do that, but to make it profitable, that's the key.
And to make it, you know, it's profitable and a valuable service, right? I mean, the thing you just described where there are Amazon distribution centers like everywhere now. They're like those cell phone towers you used to see that look like trees, you know, that they just started popping up everywhere. It's astonishing. And they're so good at making sure stuff is where it needs to be so that it can be delivered to you as efficiently as possible. I mean, the pure efficiencies that Amazon has built into its system, I think, will be studied in the same way that in the early 1900s, when Ford created the assembly line for building cars, potential car makers from other countries visited the United States to see what is this thing and how does it work? And, you know, they duplicated it and then later on, you know, obviously improved on it as well. But Amazon in many ways is like the modern version of that, you know, the car assembly line just applied to commerce.
Yeah. So I'm looking at it now because I was curious. I could get a Snickers delivered to me in under an hour for $10.
$10. Yeah. So there you go. That's the point at which it's profitable, right? And in this case, it's that price probably comes down over time. But in this case, what you're not doing is paying a guy to get on a bike, drive through New York City, and almost kill himself. We already have this incredible inter-network system of vehicles driving around of all stripes, and you become part of a bigger continuum. It's not like I guess it's like a more sophisticated version of you order a Chinese food to be delivered. And if they're being efficient, they might drive out with three orders, you know? And of course you'll look at Google Maps or whatever and say, okay, here's the order I should go in. You know, so I'm not circling back and driving too much, et cetera, et cetera. It's just, it's mind boggling.
I'm actually getting it more specific here and be like, what if I want a Milky Way? How much would that
be? You're like, I literally am ordering this now.
So if I hit add to cart.
Mm-hmm. A candy bar. This is a single candy bar.
No. This is a six pack of Milky Way for $4.49. So I hit add to cart.
Mm-hmm.
Where's my cart? There we go. There's my cart. Proceed to checkout.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if I want it within 2 hours. Oh my God. So within an hour. So under an hour.
Yep. It's stupid, right?
$14 for six yes. for six Milky Way candy bars.
So what's the actual cost of the candy bars?
$6.49, and then they want
$6.40, so
about $12 for delivery.
$12, yeah. I don't know. Welcome to the United States circa 2018, right? Are you lazy enough to pay someone that much money to bring something to your house rather than get in your car and drive there and go get it yourself? I think the answer oftentimes is yes. And I don't know what a candy bar costs, but if you were to drive out to like a convenience store and just buy six of them,
mm-hmm.
how much does a candy bar cost? I don't even have any idea. I
figure like $1.
$1 or something. So, you know, they're probably, I bet they're more expensive than that actually, but anyway, doesn't matter. But it's just...
Yeah,
what a world.
for a candy bar, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Now, if I was ordering like 15 items, paying 10, $15 for delivery within an hour, yeah, that makes a little bit more sense. But
Yeah, oh, of course. Of course.
a lot of stuff going on. Paul, you play with, I didn't even know this came out, to be honest. I must, maybe this they announced this while I was on the beach, not talking to you. But the Google, what's a Google Podcast? They came out with a new app?
So, not exactly. There will be an app in the store any day now. Right now, if you go and look for it, it's not there yet. We already have the store listing, like we know where it's going to be. What they've been doing is slowly adding podcast capabilities to the assistant and to the Google Home speakers. The idea being you could walk in and say, "Hey, G, play the latest episode," or whatever the name of the thing is. Google already has podcast capabilities in the Google Play Music app. What they are going to do is have a standalone Google Podcast app, which I think makes much more sense.
Agreed.
What it really is a deep link to the part of the Google app where this podcast stuff is. So it's like one of those app shortcut type things. We had these in Windows Phone. They have them in Android. I think they have them in iOS as well. But anyway, the way you can get at it now is to just go find a podcast with the Google app, and then there'll be you'll see the logo up in the corner. It's kind of a diamond in the Google colors. And if you tap on that thing, it goes to the Google Podcast interface, and from there you can add it to your home screen. They actually prompt you to do it, and it's sort of like a like a sort of app. But you can subscribe to podcasts. Obviously, it will, maintains it across your account, et cetera, et cetera. The two big things it doesn't have quite yet is A, it's not really an app, but it sort of is an app. I think it's close enough. I don't think most people would care or even notice. And two, I don't, unless I'm missing it, I don't see a way to auto download like on Pocket Casts, which I use, on Google Play Music, which I don't use for podcasts, and basically on every podcast app on earth, you have this option to go in and say, always download the five most recent episodes, or go into a particular podcast and say, I want the 10 latest on this one, or whatever it might be. I don't see that there, but other than that, it's actually pretty full featured. Looks pretty good. Looks like a Google app, obviously. And I think the big piece here is it integrates with the assistant stuff. So I've never tried to do Pocket Casts on the assistant or on a Google Home speaker. I guess it might work. I'm not even really sure, but this is the This is, you know, this
Yep.
is this is like Microsoft putting IE in Windows. They can tie everything into this ecosystem. It might be less friction for you just to use this, even if you like Pocket Casts, over time. So it's good and bad, depending on how you view things.
And other good things, jumping around here a little bit, is you can now send message for message. You can now send messages on your Android phone from the web, which is what I've wanted for iMessage, and yet here we are.
Yeah, so this is not available to me yet.
Well, that's
My
too bad.
understanding, I know, I would have written a hands-on about that as well. I'll keep checking, but my understanding is it started rolling out either yesterday or today, and will take a week or something. So I'm not seeing it, but I had been looking at. In fact, I'm using what is it called? I think it's called AirText, which is a third-party solution. Yeah, for sending and receiving text messages on your PC. The web interface, of course, would allow you to do the same. This is maybe another example of what the Google Podcast thing is, which is there are third parties starting to solve this problem a little bit. Microsoft's trying to add something like this to Windows 10. If Google just supplies this, why wouldn't you just use this thing? And it kind of keeps you in their ecosystem. So,
Yep.
AirText is a paid solution. I think it's $60 a year normally. It's good, by the way. Super fast. Performance is great. But when you hear about something like this, you're like, it's free, Google.
And then tangibly related, Microsoft Xbox avatars are here, as Mehdi pointed out, who's now written many articles for all those people who are wondering when he's going to come back.
He's
It
back.
is it the avatars are not as good as Apple's Memojis.
Sure. I mean, I don't the avatar thing. I'm not a huge fan of personally. I never have been. Remember when they first came out, they were a blatant ripoff of the Nintendo Wii Mii characters, the little Weeble looking things. They have evolved them at least a couple times in major form. They're getting there. They're a little more Disney slash Pixar looking, I guess, in quality. But I don't know. I don't get it.
But I bet you'll be able to play with them in your mixed reality worlds eventually, Paul, and won't that just be fun?
So that ties in nicely to an article I am currently writing, which has to do with Microsoft Xbox and hardware. And you know, because you wrote a story about it and you found out from a source that Microsoft's working on next-gen Xbox hardware. You know also that there's a new controller coming, a new Elite controller. They did announce that accessible controller, which was kind of like the one hardware thing they released or announced or whatever at the show last week. But where's the VR stuff? And the answer is it's not coming.
Ooh.
And I have I'm developing this theory. You know, I remember if we go back to, I don't know, March-ish or whatever, I was talking to a guy from Microsoft when Terry Myerson was let go. And he kind of casually told me that Microsoft was working on more Xbox hardware. And I, at the time, was very surprised by that because I really thought, given how terrible they were doing in hardware, that they would just kind of move along and go do the cloud service next. And he thought that was crazy. But I'm kind of wondering now if there isn't going to be more emphasis on service and less on hardware. They may feel like they have to do the hardware to kind of keep up with the Joneses and so forth. And of course, you know, accessories and so forth are always going to be kind of important. But Xbox One X is more powerful than the PlayStation 4 Pro, and they never really talked that up. You know, they never showed. You know, like they. Sh I think what they. It's surprising to me it wasn't more of a competitive. We're better than the other guys, kind of a thing. You know, I don't feel like Microsoft is in a position yet where they can kind of put up their game selection and say, "Hey, look, this thing's better than what they have," because most people would disagree with that. And hardware is actually one place where they're ahead. And there was no mention of that.
Yeah, they do say, I mean, they do tout that they have the most powerful console. They do say that, but they don't ever show it side by side or anything. They don't go like all in
Yeah.
on it and be like, look, this is what it looks like on the Xbox One X, and this is what it looks like on the PS4. They don't ever do
There
that.
are this doesn't get enough play either, and I'm going to see if I how I can incorporate this into this thing I'm trying to write. But you know, there is this notion of Xbox One Xbox One X enhanced games, right? In other words, you have a game that runs on Xbox, it looks better if you have an X. Okay, great. You know, they're doing that with Xbox 360 games too, right? Like, that's nuts. I think the game is called Red Dead Redemption. Has been remastered for Xbox One X. That's a 360 game. So, like, that's incredible, you know? That kind of cross-platform capability is incredible. But I almost feel like Microsoft is purposefully not really talking this stuff up because their goal is to allow those things to work anywhere on this service. That being Xbox compatible means you'll get whatever level of graphics based on the hardware or based on the service, whatever it is you're using. You know, PCs obviously are always going to look the best if it's a high-end gaming PC, but you should be able to stream games to any PC. So, like this, the thing I'm using here right now doesn't have integrated graphics or it doesn't have discrete graphics. It would not. I would never try to play a game on this thing. But if it was an Xbox game service that could stream to this thing, this is a beautiful screen. I mean, I'd love to play games in this thing. I don't know. I'm trying to formulate this into something.
Well, while you're thinking about that, last night playing with playing in a foursome. So that's those not familiar. You start with 100 people and divided by four, so it's 25 teams. And yeah, I got the actually last two kills for a resounding first place finish with four kills. It was fun. I love this game, and it is so much fun to play with friends. I wish it played better because it still plays. Like a dog walking through thick mud, but
Yeah, I went back and played it again for the first time in a while. I also played Overwatch briefly, and I played Fortnite for a
Wow,
couple
really
games.
branching out.
Well, you know, there's another story I'm kind of working on, which is that you know, Call of Duty, which has been kind of the perennial bestseller every year, is facing some real competition now with the kind of a new kind of a game, and we call them like battle royale games, but really, what's happening here is esports, right? The amount of money that's being pumped into this is kind of incredible. So I'm trying to figure out what the deal is here because I think they're going to lose out to these games, especially Fortnite, because of the esports component. I think that's where they lose out. Now they're going to try to adapt. I've made the case in the past that they, you know, that a lot of this, like Battle Royale, is kind of a mode, you know, that Call of Duty could do, and they're going to, right? They're going to try that. But, you know, you play a game like Fortnite, and it, the performance is great, you know, like it and it looks good to me. PUBG looks better, and it's maybe more to my liking from a kind of a style. Like it looks a little, you know, it looks more like a Call of Duty type thing. What's happened? Oh, I can't hear you now. What happened? Did you try to interrupt me? I'm sorry. Oh,